grind.
Alright.
Where are you going?
Grind.
Oh my god. Not coming in, I figured it, man.
Good job, buddy.
The Hunt for Answers. The Ugly Pike Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Canada's only specialized pike and muskie shop, Izoco. Head over to izocofishing.com and check out all of the amazing hand-picked, top-quality gear they have to offer. This episode is also proudly brought to you by Angling Sports, based in London, Ontario, and serving customers throughout Canada and the northern U.S. With over 30 years of unmatched angler support, they offer top-tier fishing products catering to every skill level. Explore their offerings at anglingsports.ca and gear up for an unparalleled fishing experience. Frank, today we have something truly special. We're going to dive in the world of musky fishing with an extraordinary father-son duo who I think are some of the most inspired anglers we've ever had the pleasure of speaking with. It's almost like, you know, it runs through their blood or it's genetic or something. I don't know. Mr. Danny and Steve Herbeck, welcome back to the show. You've both been on previously, and they were great conversations, and we're so excited to have you back on together today. So thanks for doing that with us.
Always great to be a part of it. You guys are, you know, something special in the industry, real guys, and we like doing stuff with real people like that.
For sure. I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's... you know, especially in the Canadian side of podcasts, you know, it's something, you know, everything is leaned towards, you know, US, right? It's nice to work with somebody actually in Canada and, you know, work together through all that.
Well, yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And Steve, Chris and I were talking before the, this morning we were talking about doing the show and stuff and, you know, one of our, if not our favorite in-person interviews was the interview we did. Now, Chris, I don't remember what number it was. It was 100 years ago, but I don't even know if you remember, Steve. I hope you do, but we were in the honeymoon cabin at Andy Meyer's Lodge, the unfortunately named honeymoon cabin that Chris and I were staying in. And you know what? After a tough day of grinding it away with you, we opened a bottle of scotch and just had an amazing, epic discussion that really impacted Chris and I. So it was awesome.
Oh, I remember it. I remember it.
And I think just yesterday. Sorry, Steve, I was just going to jump in. I think that was the same day where we met your son on the water who grabbed a muskie while he's fishing for walleye. And we were going through such a hard day. And then, you know, Danny just pops a muskie in from a minnow that was at the surface after fishing for walleye. So both of you were involved in a really special day way back. What I think that was like 2017, 16, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it's crazy how time flies. You look back that far, you know, and we need to get you guys back up there so you can actually experience Eagle Lake again. And I mean, the fishing now compared to when you guys have been there is actually even better, if you can imagine that.
I would have to say you can hardly compare it. Not only are the numbers of big fish that Eagle's famous for still there, but the numbers have of fish in that upper 30s to high 40 range I would have to say at least doubled in that amount of time since you guys were there. Why? I don't know, other than I seem to think that the numbers of Northerns are way, way down. And I think just over the last 20 years, the spawning for the muskies has become that much more successful. Yeah, catch and release plays some part in it, but people just don't kill muskies on Eagle Lake, you know? So I think it's more of a successful spawning. Possibly the explosion in the walleye population and the availability of a relatively shallow water forage base through the middle of the summer when they are really putting on the feed bag on. I think is probably has something to do with it. I don't know. I'm not a biologist, but all I can tell you is I know what I see on the water every day, and I'm sure Daniel will agree with it. There's days he's walleye fishing that sometimes they'll have more muskies chasing walleyes to the boat than some of us casting for muskies. So the population is definitely spread out in the lake and a lot more numbers, you know.
You know, it's funny you say that because we just talked about this. I think we made reference to it on the podcast a few weeks ago. But Danny, when we met you, we were with Steve all day and we had a marathon grind session. We had a rough day, no fish. And Steve says, oh, my son's over in the next whatever. Let's go say hi to him. And we are, you know, 20 feet between our boats and we're chatting and nice to meet you and all that stuff. And you guys were catching walleye, I think, in front of us. And you took a dead minnow off the hook and threw it in the water between the boats. And a muskie came up and grabbed it. And to us, that was like a kick in the nuts because of how hard we were working to find a fish. And we go see you and you throw a dead minnow in the water and a muskie comes up and grabs it and fishes away. And it kind of made us laugh. But to what you were saying, Steve, this is a sign of a very healthy fishery, if you ask me. And I'm wondering, do you guys think the COVID years had anything to do with the boom that's happening right now? Or is that not? Because I know we know that there was no pressure for at least a year or so on that water. Does that factor into it or is it something else?
I think what with the COVID years, what it did is it took pressure off the muskies. So it kind of, in better lack of terms, it dumbed them up, right? So you had 2 years of younger generation fish not being harassed. And now they're in that, you know, in that age class where they're actually using, you know, musky spots and stuff like that. So you're encountering fish that hadn't been, you know, harassed, you know, for 2 years, basically, right? As far as like, you know, seeing the benefits of, you know, the COVID and the spawning and stuff, that's going to take, you know, 10, 12 years to see the benefits of that, those fish getting to mature age. Right. But, yeah, it's like I said, in Eagle, it's, you know, the numbers of fish is just phenomenal now. And some things, you know, that Steve didn't necessarily touch on too, what's making it better is just, you know, your overall general muskie angler nowadays is, you know, a lot more educated, right? They're practicing better fish handling skills. They're not keeping fish out of the water for, you know, extreme length of time. Nets are better, you know, the way they hold these fish now. So those are all making, you know, significant roles too, as well, besides having a very healthy fishery, you know, which we have on Eagle.
You know, the COVID, Danny, like, going back to the COVID years, Frank, you know, I mean, you know, I think the guys that were lucky to fish during those years, you know, the local boys that, you know, because obviously tourism was shut down for a big part anyway. You know, it was noticed by people that I conversed with, and Danny was one of them, but a lot of other anglers, that, you know, the fish obviously weren't getting harassed as much. They weren't being quite as conditioned in that. And I think that first year that the border opened up, we saw, I mean, not a huge difference, but you noticed maybe more fish eating out or more fish really converting on the boat side maneuvers easier. But I'm going to tell you something, and I've always said it. I believe whatever strain genetically that the Eagle Lake fish are, they are some of the sharpest fish, and I've fished muskies all over. And it didn't take long for them to get right back on the game that we were after them, you know. So I think fish, it's just part of musky fishing. Nowadays, like Danny said, the anglers are also, you know, very much more in tune to what's going on, fishing the right stuff. I don't think there's more anglers on the water than when I can remember 20 years ago, because I remember, you know, a lot more anglers on the water, but most of them didn't have the knowledge. that's available to them now, and the equipment that's available to them now, and the electronics, that mapping and GPSs and everything else that's available to them. So every angler just creates a bigger impact per angler, I think, and it more than makes up pressure wise for the difference in the number of anglers.
And Steve, Danny, like, Eagle Lake is essentially a catch and release muskie. I mean, it's 54 inch. It's an aggressive, you know, size. So I think when we spoke to you last time, Steve, I think it was 20 years, you said that you hadn't seen a muskie being killed at the boat. I mean, it sounds like that there's none of that ever happens. So the fish are always getting back into, after they're caught, they're always released and back into a healthy fishery.
Voluntarily.
So, I mean, that
voluntarily,
is just,
yeah. You know, but consistent regardless, with what, there's always going to be some, when you get better anglers and more fish are being caught and they are taking care of them better, there's still mortality. So, but it's not near as bad as the glory years of tire irons and pistols, you know, that's for sure.
I'd like to hear from both you guys before we get into like the specifics of Eagle Lake. Maybe now is a good time to talk a bit about what you're doing at this point in the season, because this is a time where like you're getting ready to gear up for what, like 6, 7, 8 months of being on the water every day. How, like, are you just mentally preparing yourself? Are you thinking about strategies of how you're going to target the fish in the opening season? Or like, what's your mindset now before we get into like how we attack the fish on the water? Just wanted to touch on that.
So one thing I'm doing now, I mean, obviously then digging through the boxes of tangled hooks and separating baits and getting everything obviously put back together, is I'm thinking of, you know, what kind of winter did we have? What kind of spring are we having right now, right? We're obviously, you know, had a, in this area, a major lack of snow. We're probably 2.5, maybe 3 weeks ahead of schedule as far as spring goes, you know, and we're looking at a, you know, an extremely low water situation that we could be facing this year on not just Eagle Lake, but all the lakes around this area in general, right? So, okay, now I'm going through all my baits, right? And at least for the first part of the year, you know, when season opens, as long as the season keeps progressing the way it is, we're going to be kind of past that point of the post-spawn fishing, almost encountering those fish in the backs of the bays still, or maybe even in you know, like in some years, late spring years, you know, you're encountering fish as they're still spawning. So, you know, looking forward this year, we're going to be past that stage in the game, I would say, right? So, you know, obviously I'm planning, you know, my boxes for the early part of the season, you know, for more of the, you know, a step ahead of the game, not throwing, you know, your typical real small little twitch baits or your real small little bucktails, not to say that they won't work, but you can eliminate some of the baits that you might throw at right at post spawn or right during the spawn and not even necessarily carry that whole arsenal of them in your box, right? So that's kind of where I'm, you know, the direction I'm heading now, not to say that I won't have some of that stuff, but, you know, just the way things are looking this year, everything is going to be advanced when musky season does open up that third Saturday in June.
I'd agree.
Why do you think that there isn't a decline?
I'd agree, provided the weather trends stay as they are. As we all know, predictability of weather these days is very, very hard to predict. We could go into 3-4 weeks of 40-degree weather too. But as it stands, I totally agree with it. I think I got a little bit of advantage because I actually start in about 3 weeks, and I got all of May and June in northern Wisconsin. And I think it'll kind of give me an idea of what's really going on temperature-wise. Yeah, you're farther north. Eagle's farther north, but you can figure it's about a 2-week difference. So you know, I'm going to use that as a lot of gauge on how I attack Eagle when I get up there the 1st of July, which is only a week after opening. But, you know, a positive side of things, that over the last 35 years, the years that I – some of my very best years on big fish have been early spring and low water years. Why? I don't have an explanation for it, but I'm looking forward to it. I think maybe some of it is that it sets fish up. See, cold springs and staggered spawning because of up and down fluctuating water temperatures really screws fish up. And that makes for some of the – and that's typically high water, late spring type of years. Typically screws up the fishing quite a bit. You get a lot of fish that are suspending for a major portion that didn't even dump their eggs, or they didn't dump the second batch of eggs and things like that. And it, a lot of times, messes up the patterns for the summer. Whereas when you get early springs and the fish, you know, have a chance to spawn early and get it done with and you know, start recuperating from spawn before the season even opens, I think it sets a real good stage for fish to be doing what they're supposed to do, and predictably more so. It's just what I've kind of noticed over almost 40 years on Eagle Lake.
So, okay, so from what I gather, then, is both of your key indicators is just purely at the start of the season is water levels?
Water levels, water temps.
Yeah, I mean, water levels and temperature, right? You know, water temps, like when you can have an early, you know, an early spring and these, like as Steve said, these fish can slide in, do their thing all at once and not spend extra energy and extra effort to do it. It sets them up for just an overall better attitude for the summer, right? They can recover faster. They can start on with their normal seasonal movements, you know, all at once versus, you know, being in limbo for almost potentially 3 weeks to a month, you know, sitting out in the, you know, suspended. Do we go in? Okay, we go in. All of a sudden, oh, it's not right. We go back out. Versus, you know, like if we have this stable spring, they can just go in, get done with it, and move on with their life, right? And then you have,
yeah, got it.
You know, you have the, you know, the idea of low water. It eliminates a lot of areas when you're fishing that these fish no longer will set up on, right? So it makes, you know, a big spot that they could potentially use the whole spot of it. It narrows it down to one small little key area where they feel comfortable using. Now, that's not to say that they're not going to find, you know, some other stuff that, you know, say, like right now we're looking at eagles potentially down 5-6 feet from normal water levels, right? So, like, those main lake walleye humps or, you know, deeper structures that we normally wouldn't cast, but, you know, maybe later in the summer. Well, now they're at kind of their normal, you know, depth level that they like to hang out at. So they might, you know, you might see some fish transitioning onto, you know, some stuff that they don't particularly get a lot of pressure on because now it's, you know, ideal for them too, right?
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. What about, I just want to kind of go back a bit. Do you really think that there has been an event with the pike population? And if so, what might that be attributed to? So if we're seeing more muskies, you know, everybody knows or most people know that the muskies spawn after the pike do. So do you think that's really having an effect? And if so, like what would impact the pike population like that on a lake like Eagle?
You gonna answer, Danny, or?
Go ahead, Steve. No, go ahead.
I just think, you know, that I remember 40, 45 years ago, I mean, it was not uncommon casting bucktails over weed beds and stuff to catch so many, you know, smaller pike during the day that, and back then there wasn't tinsel, it was all hair that, you know, you wouldn't even have any hair left on your bucktail. Well, that, you know, yeah, you can still catch some smaller northerns and stuff like that in the shallows. But it's just not, there's just not as many numbers, and it might have something to do with years ago, the walleye population wasn't as good on Eagle Lake as it is now, and more people were killing them. They're easy to catch and taking them home, full limits of them, and eating them for shore lunch every year. I don't know. It might have something to do with the biology of the lake. All I can tell you is I'm not a biologist, but I see and I observe and I think about things every day I'm on the water. And there's definitely not near as many pike as there was 40 years ago. Now, is there still a healthy pike population? Yes. Particularly the deeper water pike, the big, beautiful 38, you know, 36 to 40, 41, 42 inch fish that we really don't see a lot, because most of the time they leave the shallows very quickly after spawning and they're out in the deeper water with the ciscos and stuff like that. And they show up in the fall, and all of a sudden in the fall after turnover, we see just how many beautiful big pike there are. But for the most part, they're not up in the shallows for very long after they spawn like they were, and so many of them 40 years ago. And I have no scientific basis of it. All I'm telling you is I think that had a major significant thing to do with the successful spawning of the muskies, because following that observation and thinking about it, all of a sudden now you see way more of those action-sized fish that make people happy besides the big ones by far. And there has to be a reason, and it only is because of successful spawning, you know? So that was just my theory.
And you got to think too, like, yeah. And you got to think too, like, so, you know, now that we're seeing these, you know, if you want to call them action size fish, right, that are the 38 to 45 inch class fish, those fish are, you know, 8 to 12 years old. So, I mean, you don't see the impact of it right away, right? So, like, that, what we're talking about is the successful spawns. That's how long ago that event happened. And then when you have, you know, that continuing, that's just what's leading up to higher and higher musky numbers. You know, like, small pike are probably one of, I would have to say, the muskies, when muskies are small, like in fry stage, I would say small pike probably eat the bulk majority of them. So when you don't have that, you know, big giant mass of, you know, smaller pike up in the shallows after the muskies spawn eating the fry, you're obviously going to get more muskies in the lake, right?
What brings people together more than fishing and hunting?
How about food?
I'm Chef Antonio Maleka, and I have spent years catering to the stars. Now, on Outdoor Journal Radio's Eat and Wild podcast, Luigi Hookset and I are bringing our expertise
and Rolodex to our real passion, the outdoors.
Each week, we're bringing you inside the boat, tree stand, or duck blind and giving you real advice that you can use to make the most out of your fishing game.
You're going to flip that duck breast over once you get a nice hard sear on that breast. You don't want to sear the actual meat.
And it's not just us chatting here. If you can name a celebrity, we've probably worked with them. And I think you might be surprised who likes to hunt and fish.
When Kit Harrington asks me to prepare him sashimi with his bass, I couldn't say no.
Whatever Taylor Sheridan wanted, I made sure I had it.
Burgers, steak, anything off the barbecue. That's a true cowboy.
All Jeremy Renner wanted to have was lemon ginger shots all day.
Find Eating Wild now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
No
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
So just back to your point then at the beginning, are you saying that the fishing's better because there's just a higher number of fish being caught, or the quality or the size of the fish has increased? You're catching bigger fish en masse, or like what exactly is better, or is a combination of everything? And then the other part to that is, has the fishing pressure the same or less or more?
I would say, you know, the it's better on all aspects. You know, we're seeing, you know, just the same numbers of big fish, and on occasions more big fish than ever, and more numbers of fish, and upcoming, you know, smaller classes of muskies that we never used to ever encounter on Eagle Lake. You never used to see like 30 to 35 inch muskies. You see them now, you know, not all over the place, but you encounter them now when you never used to. And, you know, as far as the fishing pressure goes, I would say it's pretty, you know, maintained about the same that it always has been. You know, you have your peak months, you know, July, August, mm-hmm. where there, you know, there's, you know, people on the lake, but it's never, you know, so busy that you can't do what you want to do and fish the spots you want to fish or run the patterns you want to run because sure. somebody's in your way type of deal, right? I mean, there's so much structure on that lake and so many, you know, little weed beds and rock bars and, you know, all that, that, I mean, unless you're just, you know, only know, you know, the communal holes that, and not to say that they're not good, because I fish them on a daily basis and catch fish on them all the time. That, you know, there's plenty of room for people on Eagle Lake. It's not like, you know, going to, I'm just going to use, for instance, like the Bay of Green Bay, where you're basically pulling up a number on a weed line and waiting for a boat to leave so you can take his spot type of deal. That's not like that.
That's crazy. Yeah. I don't know, Chris, if I could fish like that.
I remember when you and I ventured off to Eagle Lake, it felt like we were the only ones on the lake. As Danny said, like, you might find areas where there's multiple boats. You just have to do a few turns, go through a few narrows. And by the, you know, half an hour later, you feel like you're on a lake by yourself, you know. And so it's just a vast, vast, vast area up there.
I was, you know, the thing about Eagle too is where people who, like Danny and I and the other guides on Eagle that really know the lake and have been there for many years, and or the customers and or anglers that have that, you know, many years of experience and stuff, you know, Eagle Lake is so varied that having the knowledge of when to be where on the lake, can really make a huge, huge difference. And, you know, being able to make adjustments according to weather and the times of the day that maybe an angler that's there for the first time or only comes there once a year and has, you know, hasn't had the experience that we've had on the lake, there's always places and things that you can find. And there's some parts of Eagle Lake that are pure wilderness that are, I would say, probably 70% or more of Eagle is total crown land surrounding it without any, you know, human encroachment of buildings and stuff like that. So it's just where the road gets close to the lake is there, you know, lots of dwellings and where you might encounter some you know, more fishing activity. But the thing of it is the eagle is so diverse and varied that, you know, a lot of times that's what gives us advantages. People are all fishing a certain section of the lake, and because of a certain wind or a certain time of the year or certain weather, well, we know we can make a quick change by, and within 10 or 15 minutes, be in another section of the lake and have it virtually to yourself, you know?
That's essentially what I was going to ask. I was going to say, because Eagle Lake is so huge and has, you know, Chris, we always say it's like, you know, five or six lakes in one. That is it a fair statement to say that, you know, you go to a smaller fishery and, oh, the fish are off today. The fish aren't biting. You know what? Nobody's really getting bit. One of the things that really impressed Chris and I when we were up there was how the guides up in your neck of the woods communicate and are always talking about what's going on and where. So is it a fair statement to say that the fish turn on and off at different spots? And so in other words, is there such thing as a day or a group of days where the fishing just is slow on Eagle as a whole? Or is it a whack-a-mole thing where you're trying to find the other lakes within Eagle Lake that are quote-unquote on? You know what I mean?
I would say that, you know, there's both. I mean, there's just, you know, muskies operate by, you know, the weather, the moon, barometric pressure, all that. And there's just some days, no matter how hard or where you fish, it's just, you know, it's going to be tough, right? But, I mean, as a whole, you know, that lake has got so many different basins in it, and every basin sets up for a different wind, and, you know, certain times of year, certain basins are better. I mean, it's not uncommon for me, you know, in the morning, say we have an overcast morning, to start off in the clear water, like up on the Western Arm or Portage Bay. And then, oh, the sun's going to poke out. Well, next thing I know, I'm running, you know, 20, 25 minutes down south to get in the darker water. And then the fish are moving there as well. So, I mean, that's the nice thing about Eagle is that you have options. You're not like what you said, you're not just stuck on one little small body of water where, you know, the whole thing might be shut down. And every one of those basins fishes like its own lake. So on any given day, you know, if you can either stick in one area, grind it out, and, you know, wait for your chances to happen, or stick and move. Like, there's a lot of days I might fish three, four different basins on that lake, three, four different areas to find the one that is, you know, firing, that, you know, the fish are, you know, the wind direction just has all the spots set up perfect, or not even the wind direction that day, but what was the wind for 2, 3, 4 days prior? That's what really sets the spots up, is not necessarily the wind that given day. It's what did we have for, you know, the weather and wind leading up to the day I'm out there. That a lot of the times will determine what section I will go run to first and try, right? And then as, you know, you start getting, you know, down into that southern part of the lake, you have a lot more, you know, bigger weed beds. So if the weed bite is going on, you can, you know, target those areas. So yeah, like it, you gotta see what the car, you know, take the conditions, not just what you're given that day, but think what it was like, you know, the days leading up to that, and then, you know, pick an area and at least start there and then branch out from there if you need to, right?
Well, another thing that we've really observed over the years is according to the time of year, just what, you know, other species of fish are doing at that time, you know, because, you know, what's the walleye movements and the migrations through the season, which are following other bait fish, all make a big difference on which basin has a tendency to have its peak period of the year. I learned a lot of this before coming to Eagle Fish in northern Wisconsin, that there were 1,500 acres or 1,500 lakes within a 30-mile circle. And we sometimes will jump 3-4 lakes in a day. And a lake change at any given day could make the whole difference between a banner day and a zero day. And that, and with Eagle, that gives you that opportunity also without ever putting your boat on a trailer. You know, you can just make the move. And that's what makes it so, and the fact that it's not huge, big, round, and open, you know, it's mostly sections of lakes that are connected with narrows and a lot of islands, and even on windy, tough days, you know, sometimes it's not which section, it's because the weather forces you where to fish. Maybe the wind is so high, but we got all kinds of narrows that go both east and west and north and south. So no matter what the wind, you can find productive areas. Sometimes you have to fish where you can effectively fish safely, and you'll catch more fish than going where you want to be, but the wind and the weather is so bad that you can't fish effectively. And all of that stuff is available on Eagle. That's what makes it the lake it is.
Well, I think Frank, what we're hearing, because all these questions are all like, every angler is going through this in their mind. Do I stay in a specific location? I just change my strategy and adapt my fishing techniques to the conditions in front of me, or do I take what I, you know, take my boat and go to different locations and try that method? And I think what we're learning, like when you have experience on the lake and you talk to guys like Steve and Danny, that's the most valuable piece of information you can get. It's like, get a guide who can help you, assist you in shortening that kind of like time frame of accessing areas where fish are active or catching fish, because you know that the local knowledge is invaluable, and we learned that fishing in Eagle, you and I.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, yeah, we always, you know, we're big supporters of guides, and especially if you're taking that trip of a lifetime to a lake like Eagle, and just like Steve said, you know, some of the most valuable aspects of having an experienced guide is knowing, like, Chris, we had a day on Eagle. So Steve, we went, you probably don't remember, but you took us all over the place on that lake. We went, I think we were below the match line. We went all over the place, and, you know, Chris and I the next day tried our best to try and have an adventure and find some of these great spots down near where you were, even though we weren't sure where you were. We just kind of went off memory. But, man, did we ever get caught with some winds and some waves, right? Chris, remember that section with all those rocks sticking out? We thought we were going to die.
Be careful on that lake, that's for sure, in terms of the rock outcrops.
Right. So what I'm saying is, Chris, you and I were sitting there going, what the hell are we going to do? Well, you know what? If you're with a guide, the guide's going to know what to do. They're going to take you into an area where you're sheltered and you can have fun fishing again. You're not worried about getting seasick or your footing, or it's just not enjoyable. And when you're with a guide, guides like Steve and Danny, they've got the boats with the horsepower to be able to traverse the rough water and to get you to those good spots in an efficient amount of time where you're not burning an hour of your precious day up on Eagle Lake just exploring, trying to find a bay or somewhere that's sheltered. So other than, yeah, they know where the fish are and they're great at catching fish, I mean, there's a million reasons why a guide on a lake like this is an absolute essential. I wanted to ask you, what percentage of Eagle Lake do you think you've fished that you've covered? Oh, I'm just curious about this. Is it tiny, tiny, or is it most?
No, all of it at one time or another. It's just I prefer the, you know, the central up north, just because I like the bigger basins. I like the deeper water. I like the reef fishing. It's just kind of what trips my trigger, you know what I mean? And there's other people that love the dirty water parts of the lake. I kind of like in between. I like in between areas and then the clear water. It's just knowing when to be at each one. But I fished it all at one time or another, and even in one day. But for the most part, we travel somewhere between, you know, 500 yards and 15 miles a day, depending, you know, in that 15 to 20. And in that amount of distance, you could realistically cover one, two, three, four, probably six different basins right there within a, you know, 10 to 20 mile area. And most of, and to be honest with you, a lot of times we travel, you didn't have to. It's just because it's so much there and you got an idea what might be happening. But there's a lot of times there's the best fish is caught within sight of camp. So, you know, it just makes it what it is. The Eagle's got so much to explore. And yeah, we get ideas here and there that give us a little advantage here or there. But you don't necessarily have to travel. You know what I mean? Because even within a couple miles of camp, there's a very diverse amount of structures and types of water, even within, you know, a few miles of camp.
It's funny you say that because, Chris, I don't know if it was Jerry DeLay that we were talking to. I think it was. But when we were up at the lodge, Chris and I had just come back from our day-long misadventure of going all over the lake. And, of course, we got shut out. And we get back to the lodge and we're talking to Jerry. And he said, oh, I have a 57 on this lake. And we said, oh, where'd you get it? And he turned around and he pointed out the window. He pointed in the direction of Muskie Point. And we just kind of shook our heads and laughed. And when I was in Chicago, Steve, I was speaking with a gentleman who fishes Eagle a lot. He lives up there. And he said he prefers the lower part of the lake. And I had never fished the lower part of the lake. And I was wondering, is there really a difference? Like, okay, geology maybe, but is there really a difference in the caliber caught on the lower part of the lake versus kind of where you guys are, call it the match line and above maybe?
I feel like, you know, once you get down into that, you know, lower Nivens Bay, Osborne Bay type area, that there are the odd big fish down there, but it's more of a numbers type game. I mean, big fish, you know, are historically known to inhabit, you know, the bigger, deeper basins. And I feel like if you're looking for, you know, the big fish, and I mean, we get numbers too, but you got to be around the deep water areas to have your best shot at them. Now, did some of those fish migrate down there, you know, in the spring to spawn and then make their way back out, you know, to the bigger basins as summer progresses and into fall? I think that does happen. But once you get down into, like I said, that Nivens, Osborne area of the lake, I feel your chance at a big fish significantly goes down. I just feel like the bigger fish like to have, you know, access to deep water.
I think you have to be a little bit more open-minded and diverse in your fishing too. You know, a lot of them people that really like the lower sections of the lake like to fish in less than 10 feet of water, you know? And yes, that's fun and that's good, but, and that happens even in the deeper part sections of the lake. But if you are open-minded and opening up, you know, different fishing patterns, fishing some of the deeper reefs and deeper points and stuff like that with rubber and crankbaits and things like that, or heavier spinner baits, you know, you're fishing areas that a lot of people that come to Canada don't fish, you know, because typically a lot of Canadian fishermen or people that come to Canada fish are more target orientated, meaning things that you can visually see, meaning weeds that are sticking out of the water, rocks that are sticking out of the water, things like that, where, you know, a lot of times I know Danny and I and the other guides at AML are definitely at certain times of the year for sure targeting stuff that a lot of traditional isn't considered traditional Canadian patterns. And that's where a lot of our really big fish come out of, because those fish, when they're on them deeper, that deeper stuff, they're there for a reason. And that's because that's where the forage is and that's where they're actually feeding. And, you know, I think you get more bites per fish, that you encounter because of that. Second of all, you have more chance of encountering fish that slid up on a spot like that that haven't seen baits for days or weeks or years because people don't fish the open water. So I just think that it opens up the possibilities of encountering a bigger fish, and also the forage base in the central and northern sections of the lake, you know, have more of your Cisco and whitefish populations, you know, besides the suckers and walleyes and pike that muskies eat. So I think it just, you know, genetically and calorie type of deal, I think you just have a really better chance at encountering that super fish that eagle is so known for, you know.
I just wanted to ask you, Steve, when you're talking about these depths, what level are you speaking of generally for these fish?
Well, I don't like fishing much deeper than about 25 feet, but we're talking anywhere from 2 to 3 feet to probably 18 to 25, and not many anglers fish that deeper than 12 to 15 feet, you know, casters anyway, you know what I mean? So what I try and watch is I try and watch thermocline levels. And I try and watch what the other – if it's summer months, and I think there's a lot of muskies showing up chasing walleyes on walleye anglers, things like that, well, then I like to target some stuff besides the traditional stuff. I'll take at least part of the day and target that kind of stuff that I know the walleye anglers are fishing, and that's where the muskies are coming up after walleyes. So, you know, you got to kind of use your observations and keep your mind open and that gives you, you know, ideas of what to do and what to try. And sometimes you have a lot of that stuff, you know, relatively to yourself compared to a lot of other anglers, unless they're part of your network. You know what I mean?
What he's trying to say, Chris, is, you know, a lot of these areas that we're fishing, you know, the top of the hump or point that these muskies are using where the walleyes are might be 14 to 25 feet. The boat might be in 30 or 40 feet, and the shallowest where our bait is casting is 12 or 14 feet, and you're working it down that structure, or, you know, you're casting it, counting it down, and then working it in. We're not, you know, casting to pinnacles out of the water or, you know, shoreline type of stuff like what he had mentioned. You know, a lot of people have envisioned that this muskie is laying up in these big boulders, you know, with his tail just under the water type of deal. And I mean, that's not always the case, right? Like a lot of these bigger fish that we encounter are in that 14 to 25 foot zone, and we're targeting them there. And you know what I mean? Casting baits and actually working baits in that zone, you know, like a lot of your tubes, your rubber type baits, you know, stuff that you can count down and sink down and work, you know, 12 to 15 feet down, you know, effectively. That's a lot of the stuff at, you know, times a year that we're doing.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. What a part one. Two legends of the sport, Steve and Danny Herbeck. We've had the pleasure, obviously, of meeting and fishing with Steve and meeting Danny. And part two is more of the same. So make sure you stay tuned next week for that. Until then, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. That would be wonderful. It would help us out, and Chris and I would really appreciate it. Also, please reach out to us if you have a business in the fishing industry. Doesn't matter the size. We have a la carte options for sponsorship. You can pay a few hundred bucks or you can pay more for more of a scope of sponsorship. But all the eyes in the muskie world are on this show, and we are proud of that. And not only that, but one ad spend stays on our servers and in our catalog for lifetime. So that is one ad spend gets you ads exposure for life. There's nothing like it. Our deal with the Fishing Canada show means that our podcast network is on TV in front of 3.5 million people in Canada and many, many more in the US on the World Fishing Network as the show airs there 3 times a week. So there is nothing like this. in the fishing world, please reach out to us for our sponsorship deck. And as you can tell by listening to the show, we've had several approach us, and our sponsors are quite happy, and we're proud of that. So reach out, Instagram, Facebook, or through our website. We'd be happy to share that with you. Thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time.
The Ugly Pike Podcast.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco's more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.